Hello and welcome to the Find Focus podcast. Today we will talk about the mental health aspects of focus and procrastination, and I will interview therapist and mental health expert Ryan Engelstad. Welcome, Ryan. Great to have you on the show.
Yes, thank you for having me, Martin. I'm excited to talk about these topics that I'm very passionate about and actually work with a lot of different people on the different aspects of mental health and how it interferes with this stuff.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get into this field and your profession?
Sure. So I have been an individual therapist for probably around 5 years. Prior to that, I was mostly doing group therapy in inpatient units, both for substance abuse and also general mental health. So, but I primarily work with young adults during the course of my career. I've been in mental health for right around 12 years now. And over that time, you know, I started working with people in the substance abuse arena. And, you know, obviously that's a very difficult struggle that people have, but that ties into focus issues too. I'm happy to talk about that later. But over time, I transitioned more and more to general mental health. So we're helping people with things like depression, anxiety, you know, family stress, job stress, school stress. As I've mentioned, I'm working in Princeton now, so I get a lot of Princeton students, graduate students, and high schoolers hoping to go to Princeton. So a lot of pressures come up within that environment. And, you know, very often my patients are coming to me to deal with some of those pressures.
Yeah. What do you think are the biggest challenges these people face today and probably when it concerns technology?
Sure. So yeah, so technology is tough for young adults because they use it, especially in schools now, to create, to do work, to study. So it's a requirement even in a lot of their classes in schools. You know, they give them laptops or they give them tablets. So it's expected that they're going to be using technology, but at the same time, it's also their access point to all of these, let's say, less productive uses, you know, whether that be social media, gaming, other apps and, you know, video, things like that. So I think for them, you know, in a lot of cases when they start so young, you know, I get high schoolers now who get tablets at 13, 14, and they're expected to be able to make that differentiation between doing work with this technology and playing and, you know, goofing around with it, which is, I think, far more tempting at that age. So yeah. I think that's one of the biggest struggles for sure.
And how do you think people are able to face these challenges? How do they cope with this? Because yeah, it's clearly pretty hard to resist. Facebook and YouTube, all these services that are designed to be addictive.
Yeah. So one of the things I work on with my patients in this area is making sure they're being intentional with whatever they're using. So, you know, if they're on their laptop or their tablet, you know, why did they open their tablet? Why did they open their laptop? If it's to do something relaxing or to do something fun, great. Do that. Set yourself a time limit and do it for that amount of time. No problem. But if their intention or if their responsibility in that moment was to do homework or to study or to do a project, then make sure you're committing to that. And if you're finding yourself getting distracted by social media or video or whatever, you know, again, having that mindset of coming back to what your original intention was. And then in terms of the, you know, the stressors that come with social media, that's a whole different story. You know, obviously we get teenagers and college students that get a lot of stress or anxiety directly from dealing with social media and the different kind of things like that. So it's a complicated issue for sure.
And what do you recommend to your clients?
Yeah, so in a similar vein, you know, what often happens is people are just sort of mindlessly scrolling through their Twitter feed or through their Facebook news feed, you know, or through now like Snapchat videos and YouTube videos, you know, Netflix, where you don't even have to click the next thing. It just starts the next episode or it starts without you even having to make the decision. So if you're opening Facebook, why are you wanting to use Facebook in that moment? Are you wanting to connect with a friend? Are you wanting to communicate with your marching band group? Are you wanting to, you know, send a message to your mom? Do what you wanted to do and then leave. Go do something else. You know, if you're going on Twitter, you're probably just looking for news or looking for what's going on in the world, which is fine. But it's very easy. And I think one of the most difficult things about Twitter is it refreshes every, 5 seconds, you know? So you can have new information, new things to read, new information to consume basically anytime you open it. So that's very, very addictive and very tempting for people who, let's face it, in some cases, want to avoid the work that they're doing, right? So with Twitter, it's like, oh, I want to see what the most recent article from, you know, Gizmodo or the most recent sports story is that's going on. Okay, check on that and then close it out and go back to what you feel like you would maybe need to be doing in this moment.
Yeah, that's what I try to tell my clients and my customers as well. And people who use my software already know this. Like my approach is also to bring more attention to actually using the computer, because I believe at least I still do most of my work in front of the computer. Mm-hmm. I try to use mobile phone not that often, or yeah, just have it in my drawer and not use it at all, and just scheduling the times when I want to go to YouTube and watch a video. Sure. Or whatever. So
I do think that's smart. Yeah.
What are the specific things you recommend to get more into detail, like maybe some case study or something that you remember?
Sure. So for my patients who, let's say, specifically struggle with focus, I've been working, coaching one of my patients on this area. You know, we work through a couple different exercises initially, you know, around mindfulness, around being able to be in that present moment. Because for me, whether it be anxiety or depression, both struggles kind of exemplify not being present. If you're depressed, you're sad about something that's happening, not where you are right now, typically. I mean, obviously we're generalizing a little bit, but you know, it might, if you're depressed, maybe you're dealing with a relationship issue, maybe you're dealing with a loss of a job, maybe you're dealing with and it doesn't even necessarily have to be a specific trigger, right? You know, because as many people may not be familiar, depression can just be a condition that is genetic. You could be genetically predisposed to some of these issues. So if you're struggling with depression or anxiety, which we think of as being sort of focused on the future, focused on things that could go bad in the future, focused on problems that could happen, again, you're not thinking about what's happening right now. You're thinking about and really getting sort of worried or worked up about all these possible problems that you could experience. So in terms of focusing, being able to come back to that present moment, there are a couple different mindfulness exercises I work with people on to help them get there. One is square breathing, which is a very simple exercise just to kind of have your focus on your breath in intervals of 4 seconds. So inhale for 4 seconds, hold your breath for 4 seconds, exhale, and then wait for the next breath. So that's a very simple initial exercise to kind of test yourself, because if you have difficulty with that exercise, that's going to tell you a lot about sort of your desire to check your phone or your desire to turn the TV on. Like if you can't focus on your breath for 2 minutes, that's how simple it needs to start, because you're going to have a really hard time doing your homework, or you're going to have a really hard time studying for extended lengths of time if you can't, you know, gain your focus for that period of time.
Yeah, that's a great exercise. I tried that again and probably will have a blog post about that in the future, because it's probably the easiest exercise you can do to actually increase your willpower.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And another similar one that I do with my patients as sort of a complement to this is called progressive muscle relaxation. So that's a body-focused exercise where you go through each muscle group and alternate between tensing the muscle and then relaxing the muscle for about 5 seconds, alternating on and off. So this, again, turns your focus away from what you might be anxious or depressed or distracted by and onto your body. And the other benefit that this have is through the alternating tension and relaxation, you can actually lower your, you slow down your pulse and lower your blood pressure. So these are symptoms that are usually elevated when we think about anxiety. So being able to bring yourself back down to the sort of calm body focused place, you can then at the end of that exercise, okay, what do I want to do right now, or what do I need to be doing right now? And then go immediately into that activity. So no break between the mindfulness exercise and the sort of intention that you have for what you want to be focusing on.
Are there any tools or apps that make these things easier?
Absolutely. So there are a couple different, let's say, mindful meditation apps. They're really good. Off the top of my head, Headspace, Calm, and Insight Timer are all good apps that I recommend to people, you know, based on their, I think, because I want to say Headspace has a subscription model. I think Calm is free, but is a little bit more limited in terms of the variation of meditations they offer. Insight Timer is pretty good, though. It basically is free, and it links up to a whole variety of mindfulness meditations, some of which can focus on things like anxiety or focus, but there's also some body-focused meditations on there as well.
What are the biggest challenges when people want to overcome procrastination, which is probably like a real thing for all of us, even recording like this podcast or maybe later during the post-production?
And something I can relate to as well, you know, obviously doing therapy, if I do, you know, 8 to 10 sessions over the course of a day, that's a lot of notes that I have to do. And if I don't do them in that immediate moment, that opportunity that I have, then I'm left with an hour plus of doing notes at the end of the day when I should be driving home. So it's something that when I work with people on procrastination, it's a recognition that what you're doing when you're procrastinating is avoiding something that you perceive as being uncomfortable or painful. So in the case of homework, or for me, my notes, it's, I don't want to do this note right now because I just had a conversation with somebody for 50 minutes and I want to relax. That's okay for me to feel that way, but I need to remind myself that by delaying that activity, I'm going to have more pain in the future. So, and when I use that reminder, it's okay, I don't want to be stuck at the office for another hour at the end of my workday, so I'm going to do this right now, even if it does take an extra 5 or 10 minutes after my session to really finish all that information. And it's the same thing with homework, you know. People, especially kids, when they get home from school, the last thing that they want to do is then sit down in their room or in the living room and do another hour or two of homework because they've been dealing with it all day. You know, they don't want to deal with more frustration, especially when they have access to their friends or the television or technology, things that would be much less painful. So we focus on, okay, you want to avoid this pain or this discomfort now, but is that avoidance going to make that pain later easier to deal with? And most of the cases, it's almost always no, because with homework, you're going to be dealing with it, late at night after dinner when you'd rather be going to sleep? No, probably not. So then it's left till the next morning and you're trying to do it in homeroom before classes start or at lunch when you'd rather be talking to your friends. So the pain is never reduced. It's just a question of when you're going to deal with it. So that's the sort of dichotomy that I sort of work with my patients on is recognizing that the pain is not going to go away from you avoiding the task.
Yeah, if I remember Dan Reilly, he writes about this in his book, Predictably Irrational. And It turns out that we are really bad at estimating how we feel in the future. So, conceptually that we are really bad with this, but it's still I know this, but I do not change because I do not feel the pain right now. So what can I do to make this, to feel this pain or to actually act on my knowledge?
Yeah, actually I joke with my patients about the sort of like the ghost of Christmas future, like this spirit that can come visit you and tell you how bad things in the future are going to be if you don't change the sort of what you're doing or what you could be doing. Because you can actually activate the energy or the willpower, or in some cases, the anxiety that might motivate you to do it in the future. And you can access that energy now by sort of picturing yourself in that future time of like, oh, I don't want to be stuck at my office for me doing notes at 9, 10 o'clock at night when I would rather be driving home or I'd rather be home. So let me do this now so I don't have to deal with that pain and that frustration later on.
is there a way to make a habit out of this? Any other apps or some kind of routine that you recommend?
Yeah, definitely. So for a routine or apps, you know, I find that especially dealing with the pain and discomfort aspect, even something simple like a Pomodoro timer can be really useful because, again, like to your point, we sort of anticipate the pain being, and oftentimes some cases more intense than it will be. So by breaking it up with the Pomodoro timer to, okay, I can commit to doing 10 minutes of homework or 15 minutes of homework, as long as I get a break after that. So then it's okay, and I can kind of handle it because I've committed to giving myself the time that I want to take for myself, whether it's to check Facebook or Twitter or to watch a YouTube clip or to get a snack or to go to the bathroom. Convincing myself that I'll have that break makes the 10 or 15 minutes of work seem much more achievable.
Yeah, it ties perfectly back to myself where you can actually pre-schedule these times. So when you actually allow yourself like the 5-minute YouTube video, the software will actually block it again and you're forced to go back to work.
Yeah, that's great.
Are there any things and activities that have a really negative effect on mental health or will even make procrastination worse?
Yeah, so a big problem for the students, especially that I work with, is in terms of anxiety, is this tendency to do what we call catastrophizing, where you start with being worried about, let's say, the homework that you have to do, and then you worry, well, if I don't do this homework now, you know, my grade's going to go down, and then I'll have to do even better on the test. But if I don't do good on the test, I might fail for the semester. If I fail for the semester, I'll have to take the class over again. If I have to take the class over again, I won't be able to enjoy my summer. If I won't be able to enjoy my summer, and it goes on and on and on. So this sort of ruminating and catastrophizing thinking, really, not only is it taking you away from the activity that you're trying to accomplish, but it's actually making you more and more anxious. So in this case, thinking into the future, especially the long-term future, if that thinking is not activating you into doing something that can prevent that consequence, then it's really something that you have to catch yourself doing. Because a lot of times we catastrophize in lieu of planning or in lieu of organizing things that actually reduce our anxiety. So, you know, when people sort of get into this state, that's when they'd rather be watching YouTube or Netflix for hours on end because they don't want to think about all the things that could go wrong if they don't do things the way they know they should be doing them. So it's almost like a snowball effect of things getting worse and worse if we don't sort of pay attention to where our negative thinking can sometimes take us.
And then if we get into this state, like the fastest way, we'll probably do the breathing exercise again, right?
Yeah. So that's one thing I definitely work on with my patients is if the first thing you really need to be able to do is catch yourself when you're thinking this way. So that might be, you know, oh, if I, you know, bite my nails or if I, if I find myself tapping my toe, I mean, a lot of times people have unconscious behaviors that they have when they're anxious or when they're looking for a distraction. So if they can pay attention to those tendencies or snacking, things like this, then they can catch themselves a little bit more easily. Oh, I just noticed that I've been chewing my nails for 10 minutes. What's bothering me right now? Or what is there something that I feel like I should be doing that I'm avoiding? And then if that's the case, you know, where are my negative thoughts right now? Are my negative thoughts taking me far into the future? And the sort of biting my nails is helping me to avoid that or think about something else. So then if you can catch yourself, that's when you can start instituting the breathing or the body focus or the mindfulness meditation, because that's what's going to help you bring yourself back to a place where you do have the willpower to then refocus and do the work that you want to do.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Great tip. Where do you see us as a society in the US or Western Europe or in the world right now as it comes to technology? What are the challenges that a lot of the populations are facing, and how can we combat that?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's funny. I actually just did a training yesterday on bullying, especially with adolescents. So the way that technology is being used to hurt people, you know, whether you think about it in the US as fake news and fake sources and all this kind of stuff, or just in the way people sort of treat each other and talk to each other on social media. That's something that I'm particularly concerned about right now. You know, and in terms of what can be done, I mean, that's a big question. I think all the technology companies are dealing with it differently, whether it be, you know, banning people who break rules or banning hate speech, all these kinds of things. There doesn't seem to be one solution to this type of a problem yet. But on a local level, you know, working with schools outside of the technology sphere, working with families, working with kids to understand how to best use this technology, you know, that's something that I'm more focused on, that really educating kids from a younger age how to use this technology in a way that's actually helpful to you, as opposed to getting sucked into some of the negative stuff that unfortunately it's being used for.
Yeah, I think if we look at, especially at Facebook and Twitter and all mm-hmm. these stuff, they are just like, it seems everybody has such a great life, and just looking at all these great pictures is just showing a part of their life, which looks great. Mm-hmm. And like, if you look at the bigger picture or would zoom out, you see like, yeah, this part is organized, but the room or their life is a complete mess. And like, this actually makes me feel depressed. And what mm-hmm. do you think? Should people leave social media and just go back to actually talking to them, or just use, I don't know, the telephone and call mm-hmm. people, or what should people do?
Yeah, so for my adolescents that I've worked with that do have a problem dealing with sort of the negative aspects of social media, in some cases I absolutely have told them to, you know, to leave Facebook or to leave Snapchat and focus more on text messaging, where you can be really intentional about, you know, I want to communicate with this one person, and I can drive the conversation much easier instead of getting sucked into, you know, big group chats or big, you know, Twitter wars, essentially, where I don't really have any control over the conversation. And it's hard for me, you know, especially when you see people with the bullying, you know, you'll see 5, 10, 12 kids all gang up on one kid. And now I'm getting notifications all day, you know, from these kids who are just tagging me in memes and stuff like that. And that can be really hard for kids to completely back out of, unless they delete the app. So in that case, you know, that's when I will tell them, okay, this app or this technology is giving you more problems than it is giving you benefits. So how can we take a step back and look at what you really need? If that's support from your friends, how can you communicate with them in a way that works for you?
Yeah, for me, it's not like social media, but it's typically the news. If I watch the news and check the news, I feel depressed, like thinking the world is going crazy. But if I just mm-hmm. focus on doing like this podcast, for example, doing one-on-one talking to you, it feels much better. Or just reading a book instead of, the news feed on whatever news site, it's making me much, much calmer. And I notice if I stay away from the news a couple of days, I feel much calmer, and I get more done as well.
Yeah. I have a lot of patients who struggle with the news cycle and, you know, getting wrapped up into hours and hours of either watching it on television or seeing it in social media. And it's funny because, you know, there is plenty of good news out there, but it tends to be stuff that you have to look for, you know, I mean, unless you, you know, specifically create your Twitter feed for like positive stuff, you know, if you want a lot of stuff with animals, or if you want a lot of stuff with, you know, family stories, there's a lot of good stuff out there. But I think people's, unfortunately, natural tendency is to be sort of interested in the sort of more sensational, the more scary, the more dramatic stories, which often tend to be really negative. And I think that's what the struggle is sort of deciding what type of information you want to, you know, surround yourself with. Because you can create whatever you want for yourself. That's the benefit of technology. But when we're not careful with how we sort of ration it, then we can certainly get inundated with a lot of the negative stuff.
Yeah, I think it all comes back to doing things intentional. Mm-hmm. And even better than even consuming positive stuff, in my opinion, is just sitting down and creating stuff yourself. Maybe
completely agree.
writing a novel, doing a podcast. Like, I mean, the app that we're using to host our podcast is free. There's access for everybody to use it and create like an audience and share their own thoughts. And it's so easy, and it's so much more fulfilling to create something than even watching a great movie or a series on Netflix.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's another thing that I work with my patients on is that, you know, if you're going to use something like Instagram, use it to enhance your own creativity. Focus on what you can share with the world, what things you're good at, you know, whether it be art or photography or pictures of meals that you're making or pictures of you and your friends doing fun stuff. You know, have the focus be on what you want to contribute positively as opposed to what you're consuming, which is often negative.
Yeah. Is there any story or case study or example you'd like to share that sums up what we've been talking about so far?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm working, with a patient right now who, you know, I think has a tendency to sort of isolate, you know, because due to lots of different things, you know, whether it be depression, anxiety, whatever. But a lot of people have this tendency when they're dealing with a lot of negative mental health issues to isolate themselves. But even in isolation from, let's say, people and social, you know, you're still having access to your phone, you're still having access to your computer, you're still having access to your television. So how much are you really isolating yourself from the possible negatives that you have access to? So what we've focused on is, you know, changing those. And in certain cases, isolating is perfectly fine. You know, as long as you're, let's say, talking to your family, which in this case they are, we've created over the time positive ways for them to interact with the world, let's say. So they started having video playing card games with their family who lives across the country. You know, connecting with people that they know to play video games online, you know, so it's directly interacting with one person that you want to interact with, as opposed to, you know, if they're isolating themselves from stressors at school or friends that they may be having conflict with, that's fine. You can isolate yourself from that, but then create something somewhere else. And over time, what this person has found is that they have a lot more control over the things that cause them to be happy and the things that cause them to be stressed or anxious. And when they make those decisions in a conscious way, in a sort of what we're talking about, it's much more consistently leading to positive results and positive days and positive weeks, where it's like, oh, I'm doing all these things over the course of the week, where even if I'm by myself in my dorm room, I'm still connected with all these people that I like enjoy spending time with. So that to me is a really positive use of technology.
Yeah, great story. What final thoughts do you have to motivate our listeners to improve their mental health and get rid of procrastination?
Yeah, so for me, it always starts with self-awareness. So if you're listening to this podcast, obviously these are issues that you care about. So find a way to track something that's important to you, whether that be just your mood, if you want your mood to improve, you know, the amount of work you do on a daily or weekly basis, if that's something you feel like you're struggling with, if it's procrastination. You know, cause sometimes I ask myself, you know, how much actual time have I been putting into work versus how much time have I been scrolling through Twitter over the course of the week? And when you have that information, whether it be using an app or just tracking it in a notebook at the end of each day, then you can sit back and say, okay, this is the information that I have. What changes can I make, even very small adjustments, to see what kind of benefit I can experience from that? So any first step for me starts with that ability to track information that might lead to, you know, insights about opportunities to improve yourself.
Yeah, great advice. I use my own productivity planner for that, which has a column like where I plan my time and then a column where I track what I actually did. But it can be really simple, just estimating what you do or installing a software like Rescue Time on your computer and a mobile phone. And I think like even Google and Apple in their newest versions for mobile will give you an overview, and that creates awareness, which is always like the first step to to improve.
Definitely.
So, Ryan, thank you for being on the show. Can you tell us where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Absolutely. So you can find me on several different social media sites. I probably post the most on Twitter. That's at AnglesRy, which is E-N-G-E-L-S-R-Y. I write pretty frequently on these topics and more on Medium. So that's Medium at Ryan Engelstad, which is my full last name. And I answer questions on Quora, again, on similar issues. So feel free to find me there as well. And then on my podcast, which is starting its second season today, is just called The Best Medicine. And we talk about some of these issues, but a lot of other aspects of mental health as well.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Thank you for the interview.
Yes, thanks a lot, Martin. Looking forward to hearing more from you.